الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the merciful, the compassionate. All praise to Allah, the creator of the universe, and their sustainer, the provider of believers and unbelievers. And may His choicest blessings be on the seal of His prophet, the last of His messengers, and His holy progeny. Before I start, I've been asked to make an announcement for ladies. There is a ladies majlis at Dar es Zainab, Salamullahi Alayha, Yari Road, Warsawa, at 4:30 p.m. Well, it doesn't say when. The speech will be by Sayyida Shireen Rizvi, Principal Jamia Zahra Faizabad, from S. Zafar Rizvi. Yesterday, when we paused because time did not allow us to make further progress, we had covered four layers of the atmosphere: the troposphere, the stratosphere, the ozone layer, and the mesosphere. In other words, we had covered the lower atmosphere and the middle atmosphere. And now we can proceed to the higher atmosphere, and that is the ionosphere. Ionosphere because ions are formed. Those molecules that are in that sphere become ionized. And this is because the oxygen and nitrogen molecules break up into individual atoms, and the ultraviolet light, as we saw yesterday, that is controlled by the ozone layer in the lower stratosphere. But in the upper stratosphere, the ultraviolet radiation from the sun penetrates into that layer and ionizes the atoms. And because these atoms become ionized and therefore become charged with electricity, they become of high concentration in the air, and this sphere is above 60 kilometers, above 40 miles of the terrestrial surface. It extends to 640 kilometers, to 400 miles. So you can see that the area of that sphere is higher than any other area. The advantage that we get in that area is that we get radio waves there. And the reflection of radio waves means, and this begins at the altitude of 60 kilometers from 40 miles onwards, the ultraviolet radiation, X-rays and showers of electrons from the sun ionize the layer, causing them to conduct electricity as we saw, and these layers reflect radio waves of certain frequencies back to Earth. That is how we are able to listen to radio programs originating in a city far from our own. The radio waves that are transmitted by the transmitter from that point on Earth reflect off the ions. And it is these ions, the charged ions, that enable that reflection of the radio waves. And these radio waves then, after the reflection, bounce down onto the surface of the earth. And when they bounce down to the surface of the earth, by the ionization of those molecules, they bounce back into the ionosphere and down again. And hence, communication of radio waves continues to the point that there is a complete program that we can listen to. And this process, of course, has now been extended even to television. Not only sound, but even vision. And this bouncing back is possible because of the curvature of the earth. It enables those radio waves to be bounced back. They once again bounce up onto the ionosphere and return to the earth, and the process continues. Above the ionosphere then is the thermosphere, that is the sixth layer now. The thermosphere, that is the hot air, the hot sphere. Because thermal, as you know, appertains to heat. And this is from the altitude of 90 kilometers, 55 miles upwards, and temperature there begins to rise. Now there is no control over temperature because it's further higher up. The ozone layer is much further down. And indeed, it is said that high temperatures in this layer can reach up to 1,200 degrees centigrade, which is about 2,200 degrees Fahrenheit. So you can imagine how hot this layer would be. And indeed, the thermosphere is the hottest layer naturally in the atmosphere, as oxygen molecules absorb solar radiation. But this thermosphere extends to 400 miles, again, like the ionosphere, and is categorized by fluctuation of temperatures to a large extent. The thermosphere that we are now talking about, that is the layer, is where the space shuttle orbits. The space shuttle that is now in orbit and takes photographs from various planets, from the Moon, particularly Mars and Mercury, that we are concentrating on at the moment, and send back these photographs. It is amazing how clear these photographs are that are being sent from the thermosphere. But that is then the sixth layer. The final layer, which is the uppermost layer, the exosphere. Exo meaning emitting, sends out. And it is called exosphere because here the region beyond the thermosphere extends to about 9,600, that is 6,000 miles. And so it forms the outer limit of the atmosphere. And because it forms the outer limit of the atmosphere and extends so high, molecules are able to escape from this sphere without colliding with other molecules. See, because of the looseness in the atmosphere, greater space, as we said, 40,000 miles of area, the molecules are loose. They are not colliding as they do in the lower layers. Hence, they are able to escape. The light molecules, of course, oxygen and nitrogen, are difficult because they are heavier molecules. But helium and hydrogen, these are lighter molecules. And as they are lighter molecules, they are able to escape from that sphere, and hence the sphere is called the exosphere, that allows exit of molecules from that sphere. It then becomes possible for that reason, because the molecules being lighter in weight, the gravitational pull of the Earth taking charge of the nitrogen and oxygen molecules is not able to pull down the helium and hydrogen molecules. These manage to escape from the exosphere. And hence, the atmosphere of the Earth is reduced. It shrinks as a result. But it does not affect the layer at all, because more air flows in, more hydrogen, more oxygen fills up the space, and the process keeps continuing. But it is absolutely amazing to see that this concept, complex as it sounds, of how from the exosphere molecules escape from the atmosphere of the Earth, Quran takes notice of that. And even that process that takes place in the exosphere is mentioned in the Quran. But before I deal with that, just one matter to sum up our discussions on these various layers. And the question that arises is this. Well, like two questions arise. The first question that arises is this. As we discussed in a very brief way, of course, our discussions on these layers is nowhere near exactitude. But in our very brief discussions, we can see a beautiful arrangement from the troposphere to the stratosphere and upwards, and the ozone layer, and how each layer has been arranged, how it has been managed, how Care is taken to ensure that there is order in it. There is the arrangement is not chaotic in any way. The molecules do not spread out in a chaotic way, and how the temperatures are organized so that the ozone layer controls the temperature, and we saw how therefore the ice on the mountains remains intact. It does not get melted. Of course, with the rupture of the ozone layer, the danger is that ice will also melt. And that is exactly what is happening in the Rocky Mountains today. But that is entirely our own fault. We caused that problem, which I hope to discuss this evening. And Quran takes notice of that, and took notice of it 1400 years ago. But one can see that there is this distinct arrangement, that the colossal part of that point is that this arrangement is not an arrangement of 10 years, or 50 years, or 100 years. We are told that arrangement, we are told by the scientists, that arrangement has lasted for billions of years. The point therefore naturally arises that such an arrangement by itself, and sustained over such a large period of time, could not have been initiated or sustained except under proper management of a supreme authority. If that authority did not exist and did not oversee the existence of these layers and then the maintenance of these layers, so that they remain in that proper scientific position for centuries, for billions of years as it were, then that arrangement would have collapsed by now. But the second point is that if that arrangement was created by some high authority, then that authority must be so supreme, so mighty, and so learned as to be able to control all these scientific activities, particularly the ionization of the molecules, and indeed, even more perhaps amazing than that, the ozone layer, so that the population on the earth is protected. The earth itself is protected, does not get burnt off, and those on the earth are protected, both humans and vegetation. That final conclusion, I maintain, and I put it across to you with all the confidence, is irresistible, is undeniable. There is no answer to those two points except in accepting the existence of Allah, glorified and exalted, with all the qualities and attributes that He gives to Himself in the Holy Book, which to us are idols. And then when I say that from the last sphere, we humans call it the exosphere because of the exit of these molecules, the lighter molecules, from that sphere, one sees that Allah Ta'ala is not, Ma'azallah Ta'ala, unheedful of that. He is not only well within its knowledge, but makes a specific mention of it in the Holy Book itself. And I invite your attention to chapter 13, verse 41, in which Allah Ta'ala says, أَوَلَمْ يَرَوْا, don't they see? أَوَلَمْ يَرَوْا أَنَّا نَعْتِ الْأَرْضِ, don't they see how we visit the earth, نَنْقُصُهَا مِنْ أَطْرَافِهَا, and reducing it of its outline part. وَاللَّهُ يَحْكُمُ لَا مُؤَقِّبَ لِحُكْمِهِ وَهُوَ سَرِيعُ الْحِسَابِ, he is quick in taking account. But those words are so significant. He says, أَوَلَمْ يَرَوْا أَنَّا نَعْتِ الْأَرْضِ, we visit the land, right? That subject part of the ayah is so important because it lays foundation for the object that follows. And the subject is Allah Himself. He says, أَوَلَمْ يَرَوْا أَنَّا نَعْتِ الْأَرْضِ, we visit the earth. And as we have already discussed, when he speaks in plural about Himself, the implication is that he is saying that in that activity of which he makes a mention in that verse, he is talking of all his powers being put into action together. When he gives rizq, it is just one power that he uses of giving rizq. When he gives shafa'a, it's only one source of divinity that is in action. But when he uses the plural, it means all those attributes of Allah are participating in that particular action. And having used that expression and having given us a hint as to how broad that task is, which makes it necessary that a number of divine attributes come into play simultaneously. Having said that, he says, "Man khusuha min atrafiha," reducing which we reduce it of its outlying part. In other words, even in that departure, the departure of those molecules, and in the reduction of the atmosphere, there is divine hand in it. And it is being done for a specific purpose which we haven't gathered yet. But there is a specific reason why that bit of the atmosphere, which is right at the top of the layer, is being constantly reduced. While the universe is expanding, our atmosphere at its peak is being controlled so that it does not get out of mass. But the molecules keep exiting by the command of Allah. We are reduced into that corollary that nothing happens except with the knowledge of Allah and with the consent of Allah. Dua command which you recite begins in that way. Allahumma yasaluka bi rahmatika allati wasi'at kulla shay'in wa bi quwwatika allati qaharta biha kulla shay'in. That the rahmah of Allah, the mercy of Allah, encompasses everything, and everything that exists and continuously exists does so at the mercy of Allah. Hence, even the departure of these molecules is at the mercy of Allah. وَبِرَحْمَتِكَ الَّذِي قَهَرْتَ بِهَا كُلَّ شَيْءٍ. And his authority subdues everything. Those molecules would not be able to depart without the consent of Allah. He would stop them. As we have seen, there are many things that he stops, and we have discussed those, and he could have stopped it too. But there is some essence, some divine purpose in allowing that departure, and that departure is also being permitted in that way. And I come back to that theme of mine, the underlying theme throughout these discussions in all the 10 nights. This is a phenomena which man has discovered less than 50 years ago. That there are 7 layers, that the top layer, the exosphere, is a layer from which molecules depart, and therefore there is a reduction, constant reduction of the atmosphere. And yet the atmosphere does not ripple. It does not deteriorate, it does not reduce in size. Its size remains intact, and its length remains intact. Well, man came to know this only 50 years ago. That is when the scientists ever came to discover that this reduction is taking place, and the manner in which it is taking place, and the reason why it is taking place. That which stops this happening from the first to the sixth layer is able to take place on the seventh layer, because the gravitational pull of the earth is not able to control, and is not designed by Allah, glorified and exalted, to control the exit of those molecules. Now, if this is a discovery that we made only 50 years ago, how did the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, come to know of this 1400 years ago to say that this is what is happening and to make it part of the Holy Quran? The answer to that question is irresistible. That there must have been wahi, there must have been revelation by Jibreel from Allah glorified and exalted, the creator of these layers, and the one who permitted that procedure to take place, telling us that this procedure does not take place in a haphazard way. It is not taking place entirely because these molecules depart of their own accord. Say, if we visit that land and we know, we ensure that there is a reduction of the atmosphere for that particular reason on its outlying parts. That is exactly what he says in the Quran.
نلقصها من أطرافها أطراف outlined parts like the suburbs of a city. Those are أطراف. When we go to Ziyarah, for example, we say we go for Ziyarah of أطراف. أطراف کی زیارت کے لیے جاتے ہیں. أطراف means we are not now in the city. If, for example, we are in the list and we do this أطراف Ziyarah, we are going to visit the graves of Hazrat Abdul Qadir. We are going to visit the grave of Hazrat Adam alayhi salam, as it is said. Those are the outlying parts. And that's exactly the word Allah uses, which we today know is the last of the layers. With such accuracy, when these details are put to us 1400 years ago, when nobody had the slightest notion of reduction in the atmosphere, then the conclusion is irresistible. It is absolutely undeniable that knowledge could only have come to the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, from Allah, hence establishing that the Holy Book is the word of Allah and everything in it is of this accuracy. And this, as we were discussing last year, is what the scientists say, and indeed even this year, and I will come back to this because we have more evidence of how scientists in these seminars have become obliged to accept that what is in Quran is not only authentic, but it is accurate in its details. Even in its details, as we saw on the vibration of the soil, those stages were absolutely found by the scientists to be not only authentic and not only accurate, but in every detail there is accuracy. There is no inaccuracy in any minor matter. Well, I come back to this ozone center layer, and the little point that I made yesterday when we were discussing the ozone layer, and I promised that I'll come back to spend a few minutes on it tonight, and I want to do this straight away now, so that when we leave the layer as atmospheric discussions, we will have covered that point also. That is, why does the rupture in the ozone layer take place? And the answer to that is provided by the scientists themselves. The CFSs, the aerosols, it is we ourselves, through our actions, are behaving in a way in which our ecology is corrupted. We do not take care of our own planet. We throw waste around, and we throw waste, and this is the foolish part of about us. We throw waste which we know is harmful to us. We behave in a way that causes harm to us, and we continue to do so. And the pathetic part of it is that the parts of the world that are more advanced in this knowledge, and they are the ones who brought home perhaps the concept that it is our own emission of gases that brings about the rupture of the ozone layer, are the very people who are not prepared easily to sign conventions to restrict the usage of those materials that causes the rupture in the ozone layer. Well, so long as we keep remaining arrogant, so long as we selfishly give priority to our conveniences over ecology, over the needs of the planet as a whole, that long will we continue to suffer. And as I said yesterday, that is exactly why we have famine, that is exactly why we have tsunamis, that is exactly why we have droughts, this is exactly why all these problems in the world that exist come about. Because we do not behave ourselves in a manner that would save this planet for our own good. We do not seem to realize that we cannot live alone. Unfortunately, this is true at every level of our existence. In our jamaat, there are some of us who spoil things in the jamaat, who cause fitna, who cause dissension within the jamaat for no benefit either to themselves or to the jamaat as a whole. And so much time and resources have to be spent in order to deal with those dissensions. Quite unnecessary. And I'm not singling out our jamaat. Jamaat in all communities. You meet members of other communities, they will tell you exactly that. You meet the Jews, they will tell you exactly that. You meet the Christians, they will tell you exactly that. Men in all these places, in all these communities, have been behaving like this. Is Allah, Ma'azallah ta'ala, heedless of this? No, he is not. And he makes mention of it so clearly in the Holy Book. Those strong words, Zahra al-Fasad, fil barri wal bahr, bima kasabat aydin nas. Centuries ago, 1400 years ago, Allah Ta'ala says this in Quran. Zahra al-Fasad, corruption has manifested itself. Fil barri wal bahr, on land and on the seas, by the hands of man himself. Bima kasabat aydin nas. As a result of what the hands of men earn. So Allah Ta'ala has given us this warning. We are heedless of it. I use this ayah regularly when youth say to me, we are told in the 12th Imam, Ajjalallahu Farajahu. Will not reappear until there is zulm on earth. And the earth is inundated with zulm. That is when he appears, he will reappear. So isn't it better that there should be zulm? Because the more zulm there is, the more zulm man makes, the earlier he comes back, he returns to us. But that is not the purpose of Allah. That is not the purpose of Allah that there should be zulm. Allah is just. I have said this before, he is pure, and he will not cause his representative to come because other people misbehave. That is not his motive. In Islam, means do not justify the end, and the end is not, the means are not justified by the end. So one cannot use impure means to come to a pure end. That is not acceptable. That is not permissible. That is haram. For example, that hadith that you know so well, in which Imam Sadiq, salawatullahi wa salam alayhi, leaves his house early in the morning, as he always did, and as all our Imams alayhi salam did, in the darkness of the night, in the small hours of the night, with a bag of bread, and as he was delivering bread to the houses of the orphans, the bag had swollen on that particular occasion, swollen in such a way that a piece of bread came out. One of his students saw him on the street and said, "That is Asadiq alayhi salam. That is my Mawla. That is my teacher. Why is he going at this time?" And he decided clandestinely to follow the Imam. And as he was following the Imam, he saw things dropping from the basket. He said, "Now what is this?" He quietly went behind the Imam, and when the Imam had gone into a certain house to deliver the bread to an orphan or to a widow, he went and picked up what had fallen, and it turned out to be bread, loaves of bread. He kept those loaves of bread. The Imam al-Islam went further, and he hit them. And as the Imam al-Islam completed his rounds, he met him. And when he met him, the Imam al-Islam said, "What are you doing?" He said, "When I saw you, I thought I should follow you so that I protect you and I guide you and I guard you. But now that we have met, if you pass this basket of bread to me, I will deliver them. Tell me where I should deliver them. To what houses these go?" And the Imam alayhi salam says, "No, I will not let you deliver them. These I will deliver with my own hands to these orphans and these widows. So that on the day of judgment, when men will be near the fire of hell, I should be able to use this as an excuse to Allah that he should spare me from the fire of hell."
This is a Sadiq alayhi salam saying, a Ma'soom alayhi salam saying. And the student immediately turns around to him and says, Mawla, you speaking like this? You are a Ma'soom. I have lived with you. You are totally sinless. There is no sin that touches you. There is no virtue that misses you. And how can you speak like this? And he says, no, that is arrogance. That is arrogance. Each human being has got to be careful of what happens about him. This young man, having picked up those loaves of bread, decided that he would not touch them. And he decided that he knew certain poor people to whom the Sadiq alayhi salam had not reached. And so he went and delivered those loaves of bread to them. Later in the day, Sadiq alayhi salam said, three loaves of bread were short. You picked them up, what did you do with them? He said, I gave them to poor people. And Imam alayhi salam says, isn't that fact? You stole them for me and you went and gave them to poor people. Were you not ashamed that you were giving to poor people that which is stolen? You can see the level of Islamic teaching. You want to give in charity, that charity must be pure. Corruption money cannot be given in charity because it is a local money. Stolen money cannot be given in charity. Money from which homes has not been paid cannot be given in charity, because there is a right of the Islam in it. There is a right of the Imam alayhi salam in it. If you have stolen that right, the one says, even if the 450 is pure, it cannot be given. Means do not justify the end. If the means are unlawful, the end, even if it sounds noble, is essentially unlawful. The student was a student of Al-Sadiq alayhi salam. Directly, we are students of Al-Sadiq alayhi salam. But we are miles away from that studentship. This was from somebody who was sitting at the foot, at the feet of Al-Sadiq alayhi salam. He had a genius, ingenious ancestry. He said, Mawla, why not? Because if I have stolen that look, I commit one sin. When I give it to the poor man, I get 10 thawab. So if one is deducted, I'm still left with 9 thawab. As-Sadiq alayhi salam says, you do not get 10 thawab, you do not get any thawab at all. Because as I said, that which is stolen cannot be subject of charity, therefore you have no charity, therefore you get no thawab. Your sin remains the same. So you still are answerable for stealing 3 loaves, and there is no thawab written for you. Now that is the teaching of Islam. That is the level at which Islam goes and does not justify means at all. And hence, the coming of the Mahdi ajjalallahu farajahu. Noble as it is, because his coming will bring peace and justice on earth. So noble as that is, it cannot be achieved through unlawful means. And for each zulm we do, we will become answerable to Allah. And there is no sin more difficult to deal with on the day of judgment than zulm. Because zulm is something that Allah does not easily pardon. He does not do zulm. And as I said yesterday, وَلَا ظَلَمُوهُمْ, we do not do zulm on them. وَلَاكِنْ بِأَنْفُسِهِمْ يَظْلِمُونَ, but they make zulm on themselves. And this is exactly our take. And Allah Ta'ala says, for zulm, my hands are off. You will have to satisfy the person whom you have oppressed in this world. If it is your wife, then you've got to please her on the day of judgment. And if, as is equally common these days, it is the wife who is oppressing the husband, then she has to make him happy on the day of judgment. And if a partner has defrauded a partner, then that partner has got to make the other partner happy. Zulm is something Allah does not accept. And when he has the power to bring his son Imam alayhi salam at any time, he does not depend on our wrongdoing. Allah will never accept a wrongdoing. And hence, The martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam also is not the doing of Allah, it is the doing of Yazid. He caused the murder of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and Allah has no hand in it at all. But this ayah is used in answer to that, which says, Zahara al-fasad fil barri wal bahr, there is fasad in a land on the sea. Zahara al-fasad fil barri wal bahr, bi aydin nas, by the hands of human beings themselves. Bima kasabat aydin nas, what the hands of humans has earned for themselves. And if there is zulm, if zulm is the foundation of any activity, of what is earned, then what is earned is harm, is unlawful, because it is the aspect of zulm. That is how we are behaving with ecology today. We are making zulm on what Allah, glorified and exalted, has created. He has created it for our convenience, for our comfort, and we abolish it. We cut trees, and the cutting of trees has caused so much for problems. There is so much more deforestation than there was afforestation, and that brought so much chaos in the world. And such, and the prevalence of such activities continues in the world. But the great thing is that Quran is not heedless of it, and that glory of Allah keeps shining in the holy book, where He makes note of these things and chastises us in such strong words. Zahara al-fasad fil barri wal bahr bima kasabat aydin nas. It is our own doing, and this is exactly what we are perpetuating, the rupture of the ozone layer, in a way that causes us problems. A friend was saying that in New Zealand, people are today complaining that their summer has become intolerably hot. And they say that is because the ozone layer is not stopping, is not stopping the ultraviolet rays, because we have caused rupture of it. Well, we do not seem to realize that in such activities we are not only infringing the laws of the state, we are also infringing the laws of religion. Because in damaging the ecology, the creation of Allah glorified and exalted for the benefit of mankind as a whole, we are damaging the creation of the of Allah, and for that we have to answer Allah. We are sinful and answerable to Him. But answering Allah is something that Allah has mentioned repeatedly in the Holy Book. Is there scientific evidence for it? And the answer is yes. He not only has mentioned the punishment He will give, He has scientifically explained how His judgment will come about. And this is on the question of the fire of hell. He has said there will be fire of hell and people will be burnt in it. But if people are burnt, they are burnt. And it's all over them. So how will they remain there? Hum fiha khalidun. How will they permanently remain in the fire of hell? The scientist says that the skin is perhaps one of the most important organs of the body, and it is the center of our senses. All the sensations are felt by the skin. Therefore, the skin is very important. It keeps away all dangers from us, in the sense that it becomes a covering on the body, on the tissues, and it protects the tissues. And it has blood vessels in it. It has tissues underneath it. There is the dermis and the epidermis. The epidermis, the top part of the skin, protects us. But that is the part that has sensation. When it is burnt, it is that part, the top part, that feels the sensation, because it is underneath that top part, the epidermis, that the dermis has the nerves, which cause the sensation and gives us the pain, the burning pain that we feel. Well, the argument runs this way. It says, if that skin is burnt on the Day of Judgment, then in this time man will not be able to feel any
any more sensation. Allah Ta'ala, glorified and exalted, makes us wise even about that, so that we should not take the fire of hell easy. And it is with the matter in Surah An-Nisa, chapter 4, verse 36. He says, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا بِآيَاتِنَا سَوْفَ نُسْلِيهِمْ نَارًا. Those who disbelieve our revelations, الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا بِآيَاتِنَا, those who disbelieve our revelations, we will soon expose them to our fire. سَوْفَ نُسْلِيهِمْ نَارًا كُلَّمَا نَجِدَتْ جُلُودُهُمْ بَتَّلْنَاهُمْ جُلُودًا غَيْرِهَا لِيَذُوقُوا الْعَذَابَ. We shall expose them to the fire. As often as their skin is consumed by the fire, we will give them a fresh skin. And that fresh skin will be exposed to the fire and will be burned by fire. And when that fresh skin is burned, we will replace it with another fresh skin so that the process is perpetuated. In other words, Allah answers the scientific criticism well in advance by saying that you will not get away with it, because after all, the one who created the skin is Allah Himself. This is what we tend to forget. He is the creator of the skin. So when He is out to punish us by burning the skin, then He knows exactly when that punishment will cease. And He already has another procedure in hand. And He who created our skin in the first place will be able to create our skin again and again. As you say in Yasin, when the person calls upon the Holy Prophet and says, well, how can Allah recreate it for the day of judgment? Our bones will already have become ash and will already have become earth. How does He then recreate us? And the answer the Holy Prophet gives is by a revelation that immediately comes, and Allah says, I will recreate you in exactly the way I created you, awwala marra, the first time. Because if He can create you the first time, He can create you the second time. And if hell is going to be perpetual, then that process, Allah says, will continue taking place. And it is amazing that the words that Allah uses are so para once again. They are so para. And He says that I will badalahum junudan ghayraha, I will change that skin and put a new skin on it, liyadhuqul adhab, so that they keep tasting my punishment. Inna Allaha kana azizan hakima, and Allah is mighty and is wise. He cannot be in a sajiru billah fooled by any such person. Well, a dermatologist attended a conference again in Saudi Arabia. This is one thing for which we need to compliment them, that they do arrange these conferences. A recent one in Dubai was very much publicized, and Quranic discussions take place on the basis of facts. And again, Sheikh Abdul Majid Zandani, the professor of Islamic studies in King Abdul Aziz University in Jeddah, was present at that particular conference. A dermatologist from Thailand puts across a paper, and having put across the paper, turns around and says exactly what I just said, because it's a very well known scientific principle, that it is the upper skin, the epidermis, that takes the pain, and that's what feels the burn of the fire. And he is asked that when we talk of the fire of hell, not a Muslim, but he was a Buddhist, he says, well, we have such expressions in our religious book. He's given a year, he comes back the next year for the conference, he's not able to find anything of relevance on that point in the Buddhist books. He is shown this ayah of Quran, and when he's shown this ayah of Quran, he gets baffled. He says, you are discussing dermatology with me. You are asking me, you are showing me the possibility of people burning in fire because Quran says that the skin will be renewed. I accept that. I accept the possibility of the skin regrowing in that way, and there being continuous regrowth of the skin. What I cannot understand is how the Quran conceived that thought 1300 years ago, because that concept did not exist. Science, as you know, lives on theory. But that theory of repeated growth of the skin does not exist in science at all. It did not exist at that point in time at all. This is something very recent that we have come to learn in dermatology. How did Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam come to know this at all? And so when the chef turned around to him and said that we believe this came from God, he said, oh, there might be merit in it. So they showed him the work of Dr. Keith Moore that I discussed last year on embryology, on obstetrics. And when he saw that, and saw the words in Quran, the exactitude, what was not known, the three veins, for example, the fallopian tubes and the functioning of them, all those described in the holy book, he became so baffled that in the third year he had to come back and say, time has come for me to accept La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah. So Allah Ta'ala in the holy book has dealt with these scientific matters and also scientific objections to his divinity, and the way he perpetuates his authority. And likewise in heaven there will be eternity, so in hell there is eternity and there is provision made for it. It is when we see these distinct provisions so carefully planned out and so exactly executed, we know that there is a hand in all this that is above all hands. Yadullah fawqa aydihim, his hand is above your hand. Well, and that is the streak of divinity that Allah Ta'ala sends down to us, so that which we cannot see with our eyes, because Allah cannot be seen, we can feel with our senses, and we can acknowledge with our intellect. And it is this measure of Allah. And it is this battle as we saw in the الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا بِآيَاتِنَا, those who disbelieve in the ayats of Allah. It is precisely this battle that brought about the event of Karbala. Karbala was no political battle at all. It was a battle to establish these Islamic principles and to authenticate the holy book. Not only to authenticate the Holy Book, to authenticate the existence of Allah and the word of Allah and the revelation of Allah. I say this because, as I have said before, Yazid turned around and said, La wahyu nazar wala khabarun ja. No revelation ever came. What we ask Yazid today is that if no revelation came, how are all these matters of time compromised? How are they explained? Except on the basis that those revelations came from Allah glorified and exalted. And it is to preserve this that the Holy Prophet made provision for his family to take part in preservation of Islam. When Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, as you know, went out to do the bleed, the kuffar, those وَالَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا بِآيَاتِنَا, those who have been lying the ayat of Quran, would stone him. They would stone him so much that he would be wounded. They would throw rubbish on him. When he would come home, Bibi Khadija alayhi salam would receive him. She would receive him with two hands. She would clean all those wounds. And as she cleaned the wounds, she would say, oh Abu Qasim, you have been so successful. This is a test for you from your Lord. A test for the propagation of Islam, and you have been so successful that you have come home in this one piece with all these wounds, and how gloriously these women will speak for you on the day of judgment. She was giving him heart, she was giving him courage, and saying, tomorrow Allah will be more merciful to you, his test will be lighter for you. And there he passed. Bibi Khadija alayhi salam supporting the Holy Prophet in that way, when the time came for Bibi Khadija alayhi salam to breathe her last. And Bibi Fatima alayhi salam was next to Bibi Khadija on her deathbed. The one was here, Bibi Khadija alayhi salam, next to Bibi Fatima alayhi salam, who is Fatima, I am leaving this earth. I am not sorry to leave anything in this earth except your father. Fatima, he will be alone after I know. I have been his father all through my life. And I have served him when the two stones at him and when the two rubbish on him. Fatima, when I have gone, you take over my role. And how well did Bibi Fatima to Sarah alayhi salam serve the Holy Prophet? Ultimately the Prophet said, Fatima, Ummu Abiha, she is the mother of our father. Indeed, even in Oman, when she learned that the Prophet had lost his teeth, she ran up to her, she got to the Holy Prophet and started cleaning his feet and started giving him courage once more, cleaning the wounds of the Holy Prophet. One could see Khadija of Makkah in Ahad in the form of Bibi Fatima. And then when the time came that Bibi Fatima was cleaning her last, she goes to Zainab and says, Zainab, I am now going. But as I go, you will see Hasan alayhi salam vomiting in liver. You be with him, give him courage, give him promise. But when Hussain alayhi salam decides to go to Karbala, Zainab, don't leave Hussain alone. Don't leave, let him go alone. He will go with children and he will go with women and he will need your support. Then at that time, take my place, Zainab, and go along with him and spare him, so that the flag of Islam remains flying, so that the name of Allah is a shrine to the day of judgment. And Zainab saying to her mother, what she ultimately said to Hussein, mother, go in peace, don't worry about that issue. Zainab will exercise such patience. Such patience that patience is done will marvel at the patience of that time. And this is exactly how the Zainab alayhi salam conducted her affairs. Indeed, when the time came and Imam Hussain alayhi salam decided to leave for Karbala, Zainab alayhi salam not only joined him, but she became the head of all the women and children who went with Imam Hussain alayhi salam to Karbala. She looked after them, after Imam Hussain alayhi salam. She nursed them, she nurtured them, and she ensured that the cause of Islam, that the cause of Imam Hussain alayhi salam remained shining in Karbala. She did not go without sacrifice. She took two of her sons, our young sons, 20 years old, 13 years old. She took them together on the eve of Ashura. She brings them near to her in her tent and says, oh Abu Muhammad, you know, tomorrow is a day of sacrifice. Hussain alayhi salam will be martyred. You cannot remain alive when your uncle is gone. And the son said, yes, we do not seek to be alive in the world in which Hussain is not living. And we will go and die before he dies. And she gives the parents saying, oh Ayman al-Muhammad, your grandfather, the maternal grandfather of Haydar al-Karam, the paternal grandfather was Jafar al-Tayyar. Both of them were killed in the cause of Islam. Both of them served Islam. Jafar al-Tayyar lost his both arms and his legs lying in heaven because Allah has cured his wounds. You cannot demean them. You cannot behave in a way in which their high name has a blemish on it. And they said, brother, we will not we will behave in such a way that both of become Brahmanas, and indeed this is the way in which both of them conducted themselves. They're going to seek leave from the Prophet. And Imam says, no, I am a martyr. You will not go to fight in the battle. You are the battles, you are the flowers of my sister. If you go, the progeny of my sister goes. You cannot go to run back to the father. And say, father, you were telling us what you told us last night. Uncle is not letting us go. You go and speak to him. And say, and our custom said, and they come there, why are you rejecting my offer? Why are you rejecting my sacrifice? And on the same day, God, through these two, your progeny will continue. If both of them get mastered, your family will cut off all together. There will be nobody after you. And Zaynab alayhi salam says, my brother, if that of any significance, will you consider the wasiya of my mother? My mother, Fatima Zahra alayhi salam, may wasiya about you rest before. If on the day of judgment my mother asked me to help, when my son was being murdered, you get your son to recognize. What if I did my mother? Brother, don't make me helpless. Don't put me in the position in which I am ashamed to my parents. And indeed, Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, oh, nephews, your mother is making me helpless. Otherwise, you are part of my heart, and I would not let you go. He kisses them goodbye and prays for them, and they fought so valiantly. Both of them fought so valiantly that in no time they got to the tent of Umar ibn Sa'd rahimahullah alayhi. They did not go for the food soldiers. They went for the right commander there and struck to his tent. Umar ibn Sa'd, like Muawiyah, his supreme, ran away from the battle and they started chasing him. He went round to his army and said, you are fighting these people in years. These are not little children of 12 and 13. These are the grandsons of Haider al-Karrar. These are the grandsons of Jaffer. You cannot kill them. Surround them. Now 1,000 people surrounding 2 years of class and 13. Ultimately they both fall. And when they fall, they call the uncle, Ya Allah, Adrigri, oh, uncle, come to our house, come to respond to us. And the Imam alayhi salam runs there. They are still breathing. The Imam alayhi salam kills the Prophet, saying, oh, Prophet, oh, Muhammad, I grieve on your departure. But if you had any wasiya, say it to me. I always feel pain to say this, because it is now an elderly uncle, 57 years old, asking a nephew of 12 years to make wasiya to him. And they say, yes, uncle, we have wasiya. When you go back to them to the extent, tell our mother what you say of the offense. Tell her that we were martyrs, and tell her more importantly that we were martyrs thirsty. We went to your presence. We did not drink water because Adra is still thirsty. And when Adra drank water, we died. He was the first. Allah la'natullahi ala al-qawmi al-zalimeen. وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون إنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون رحم الله من يقرأ الفاتحة